Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In the new novel, Love is a Canoe, Ben Trank delivers a smart, funny, romantic novel about the fragility of marriage and the difficulty of repairing the damage when well-intentioned people forget how to be good to one another. Ben Trank is the president and publisher of Razorbill, a Penguin Book imprint for children and young adults. He is also the author of the novels Consent and Miracle Man, and has had residencies at McDowell and Yaddo. In the 1990s, he wrote Ben's Life, a monthly column for 17 magazine. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ben Trank to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here. It's an exciting thing for me.
Thank you very much for doing this. At what point did this novel start to come together for you?
It came together about 5 years ago. I was ready to write a new novel, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. But because I was working at Razorbill as a publisher, I obviously was around lots and lots of different kinds of novels and different kinds of ideas for novels. And so I was thinking about a short story, actually, about a little girl on a pond or a lake with her grandfather having conversation. And I thought that was an image that I thought was striking and that no one else would really want. So I held on to it. And that's when I began to build a novel around that image. Though, of course, in my novel, the little girl eventually became a boy.
There is also the old adage, of course, being write what you know. This book is very much about your life as in publishing. There are editors and publishers and marketing directors and publicists and book events and so forth. So this gave you an opportunity to think about where you live, I assume.
Yeah. I had written a couple novels. In my first novel, I had written about a thief. And I'm not a thief. and in my second novel, I'd written about a graduate student, and I had thought a lot about graduate students, but I never was, or a PhD dissertation graduate student. And I really, for this third novel, wanted to go back, just as you said, to that old dictum of write what you know, and to just drill down so hard on it and embrace it as much as I could. So I began unwittingly although I work in children's publishing and the book is completely focused in adult publishing and I don't sit in on adult publishers' meetings, I transposed or just imagined what happened in those meetings. So every day became not so much research, but a time to reflect on what I might write the next morning.
The novel comes very much from this much celebrated self-help guide, Marriage is a Canoe, written by Peter Herman as a character in the book. This is coming up on its 50th anniversary, and it allows the characters to sort of have that at its base and for all of them to reflect in one way or another.
Right. It's a funny thing because the way Stella, the editor, sets it up, and pitches it in a sense to the marketing group and the publishing houses. It's the 50th anniversary of the events upon which Marriage is a Canoe is based, because in fact, Marriage is a Canoe is only 40 years old and she has to sort of fake it and slide it in there. And so when we were copy editing and proofreading, we had to keep recalculating to make sure that I had gotten everything logically right. But the parts of this novel that are excerpts from that self-help book I think for me, the strangest thing I've ever done as a writer, because for most of novel writing, of course, you draft and then you redraft and you throw away and you draft again. But those sections I really wrote and just tweaked words here and there, they really just came very easy. And very little of it ever comes easy for me. But those sections did, I think in part because they're so sentimental and so simple that I didn't ever have to question the sort of simplicity and sentimentality of what I was trying to get across.
So this young editor that you mentioned, Stella Petrovic, who is this young editor, she's hungry, she's working in New York, she's ready to go, and she has this plan to hold a contest where Peter Herman, author of Marriage is a Canoe, can save some lucky couple's marriage.
Right. And it's sort of showmanship because Peter Herman has no expertise or ability or has shown no previous really talent for that at all. So.
And yet you can see this unfolding at a meeting and having people nod in agreement.
Right. I mean, I love that idea, and I think it's true not just in publishing, but in all kinds of professions of, you know, coming to consensus just to say around a table of 8 or 10 or 50 people about an idea, and then maybe a strong voice in the room says, I like that, let's do it. And a whole lot of more thoughtful people might think, this is crazy, we shouldn't do this. And then they spend the next several months or however long trying to build toward a thing that really might not make sense. And I, just like everybody, have seen a lot of that. And so I really was playing around with that notion of what happens when people are just allowed to run with ideas that maybe are not such great ones.
Was it always your intention to have multiple narrators, to skip around in time and voice?
Yeah, and I think it partly has to do with having a full-time job and writing that to write from one person's, a sustained point of view really takes, for me at least, a sustained writing period to drive that whole story home, and not necessarily to get it right, but to really contain a complete person. So it was a combination of necessity in that I have to write before I go to work, and also to the sort of the disjointed feeling of, you know, what I think of as a modern novel is that you can throw a lot in because, and I appreciate this, readers are so willing now to try different things over the course of a novel. So it's the juggling effect is one that I love in novels that I read and that I wanted to pull off here.
What do you think it is that readers are looking for in that sense of accomplishing different things and hearing different perspectives?
I mean, I think it's possibly true now more than ever because, like everybody, I'm looking at the internet and looking at what readers read and talking to lots of different readers, is that there's been, at least I think in the last 5 years, this kind of dissolving of preference for readers, where they'll read a young adult novel and then a terrific mystery and then what we call a literary novel, and then maybe a piece of what we used to call, or maybe still do, women's fiction. And they just are no longer sort of caught in one area, which I think is great and weird, because it means that they're sort of open to reading all kinds of different stuff, and they, let's say, hopefully enjoying the different effects of different kinds of considered writing. And I indulge in that in this novel. Like I was, you know, reading through it again and over the past few days, and you know, I think I knew that readers would be willing to read lots of different pieces of information and string them together.
The young couple who is being helped here, I guess help with quotation marks, is Emily Babson and Eli Corelli. Give us a sense of this couple, how they came together in your mind, and the relationship that they had that you wanted to explore.
The relationship really started from this woman, Emily Babson, and the idea of the danger for people, and certainly for Emily specifically, in wanting to have some kind of perfection. The idea that it suggests to us that we can have perfection in our work lives and in our marriages, and that anything less reveals you as a failure. So that I think from a very young age, this smart young woman believes that life is about striding towards some kind of perfection and is selective in her path there. And I think that's especially true for these kind of young-ish creative class people in New York who have very interesting jobs and expect their marriages and love lives to be as interesting and as rich and as fulfilling. So in a sense, as it plays out in the novel, she selects Eli Corelli, and that is the fissure or problem, is that selecting and falling in love can be two different things. And so she's trying to make, even at the very beginning of the novel, something work that looks terrific and should feel terrific, but may not be.
And in this contest, it is said, as you write, the winners of that contest, one lucky married couple, a couple with normal everyday problems, will visit right. with Peter Herman. And the most compelling dozen entries will be read by Peter Herman, who will select our winning couple. Which brings to the discussion of what Peter is looking for and getting involved in all of this.
Right, right. I mean, it's a hopefully a funny combination of Stella, the editor, and Peter, and the kind of complicity we have in that we, you know, I'm saying we as in publishing people, but that's not quite right. You know, that we know we can't fix big problems, but we, in this case, they were like, we'll kind of make a gesture toward problems, and do a sort of cosmetic fix to them. But the only way to do that is to have not like a broken bone, but somebody who's maybe just sprained their ankle or feels tired or something. So that is the sort of the reveal, is that only, there was really, in a sense, only one winner for this contest, and it's Emily Babson and Eli Corelli, because there's nothing actually wrong until you really, you know, until they actually sit down and talk, and then, of course, you realize that there's much more wrong than surfaces might reveal.
Going back to what we were talking about before, but the whole idea of this as a contest, and to what you just said, you do fulfill it beautifully in the humor, because it is hilariously funny. But just the description of the book of Marriage as a Canoe, where this sensational book began its life as a gift edition size hardcover emblazoned with the painting of two figures paddling a canoe on a lake at sunset, a timeless American image meant to appear nostalgic. Canoe sold 5,900 copies of that first edition, copies that are now rare and worth thousands. Since then, right. Marriage as a Canoe has been in print as a paperback, with three distinct revisions, five new forewords, and several afterwards, addendums, and notes to new and old readers. There are over 2 million copies in print. The book never appeared on the New York Times or USA Today bestseller list because expert publishing analysts have called it the most shared self-help volume in the world. So there's a lot of justification just in the contest.
Right.
And having to see that through to the bitter end.
Right. Yeah, that the press release is very sort of heavily researched and based on things we've all seen, that, you know, you sell something, a book or anything else, and then you say, oh, we've actually, 14 people or 18 people have actually seen it because we believe that they exchange. I mean, there's lots of funny ways that marketers talk about getting stuff out there into the world. The other funny thing about that was I was looking for something I'm trying to write about, that Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I read in the most recent paperback edition of that, the preface by his daughter. And unwittingly, I really imitated that, where that book started out as a, you know, 5,000 copy. And what I realized from that is that most books, except for, of course, the very big ones, do start out that way. And then some just tumble into becoming huge. But as you were reading that, I was thinking, the other thing I was thinking about Marriage as a Canoe, a self-help book, is people reading it much like Emily Babson reading it when she was a little girl and feeling good while she was reading the book, and how important that is about self-help, that it makes people feel good, but then looking up at whoever, you know, you're married to or worried about and saying, well, you don't make me feel good, but this material that I'm reading does, and this sort of the contrast between those two things.
We are talking to Ben Tranke, is author of the new novel, Love is a Canoe, which is published by FSG. It is amusing because at the very beginning of the book, the first page of the book, is Peter saying that the stories are meant, in Marriage as a Canoe, the stories are meant to entertain. Yes, they can be life lessons, but the ultimate point of this is to be an entertainment.
Right. And I think that's true for, you know, whenever we sit down with people and they say, I want to tell you a story, you know, we all have people in our families who tell us the same stories over and over, and we recognize that it's giving them a lot of joy to tell us the story that we may have heard before, that they're always meaning two things at the same time. One is, I think I'm entertaining you. And two is, and I think, I hope I'm sharing some piece of wisdom with you. So I was thinking a lot about that concept.
Two things I want to talk to you about in the construction of the novel. One, of course, is the decision to make Millerton such a strong and vital place in the novel. Of what brought you to Millerton, New York?
When I was a long time ago in my 20s, I rented a house with some other people in Red Hook, New York, and I loved it there. And then more of life happened, and I wasn't able to keep renting houses in upstate. But I loved that area, and I wanted to make sure that although I would have some characters in New York City and in Brooklyn, but I wanted to make sure that a large portion of this book didn't happen in an urban environment, and I felt that this guy Peter Herman would after a success like that would leave New York, because in some ways after a success like he had when he was very young, New York would no longer be something that a guy like that would necessarily want to be a part of. So I felt that he would come to rest in Millerton, and of course he did because he had met his wife there when they were children, and I driven through Millerton many times and had caught a train there, but I didn't know it intimately, and that was that's how I got there. Is that I was like, I know this place, I love this place, but I don't know it so well that I'll be constrained by its physical nature in the way I write fiction about it. So,
and with that in mind, what did that mean for writing about Brooklyn, which you know very much about, where you were born in Brooklyn and live there?
Yeah, the Brooklyn piece of the novel, I guess I felt that, I know very Brooklyn very well, and it is now very much a layered place for me, in that I see what it was in the 70s and 80s and 90s and what it is now. And I wanted, in some ways, to see it through new people who had come to rest there. Emily is from Massachusetts, but she is living there in its kind of new iteration as this place where you ought to be if you're the kind of person who wants the sort of perfection that she wants. And I wanted to satirize that a little bit and show that it doesn't satisfy her the way she wants to be satisfied, but I also wanted to sort of capture the moment we were in. So it was kind of an irresistible thing to put Brooklyn in the novel.
The other thing I wanted to discuss is this idea of second chances, which you seem to very much explore in the novel, and doing things over again. How conscious was that as a decision or an emerging theme?
Well, it's something that I'm aware of. We're sort of raised on Fitzgerald's line about the second acts, and in America there are no second acts. And what I think we've seen, of course, all across all sorts of lives, is that yes, there are lots of second acts and third acts, and you get these opportunities. And in fact, we love to tear people down and build them up again. And we're able to tear people, we're able to sort of tear ourselves apart and get built up again. And in fact, we're very forgiving of mistakes. It seems to me that the people, we're hardest on ourselves, and other people are actually not that hard on us. And so I was really interested in this idea, both for marriage and for love, that love is more, I would propose that love is more forgiving in some ways than marriage is for people.
There's a line in the book where Peter says, "I told you my book isn't about true love. It's about how to have a good marriage. They're a bit different, don't you think?"
Right. It's a duck. it's a duck. And for him, it's the duck that he's been living his whole life is this. There's a line that was, I think my editor cut, where he waddles away at one point from an argument in New York and goes back up to Millerton. She said he wouldn't waddle. And I said, okay. But in my head, he's a big man. And when he goes back to Grand Central Station, he really does waddle because he's afraid of the power of a big, heartbreaking love, because that alters your life in a way that I think a marriage of accommodation or something that looks really good does not. So it's this sort of core truth that he never, each day he doesn't deal with that core truth.
When you think about people meddling in other people's lives, whatever the intentions may be, it got me to thinking of what that is, of how something that seems, for want of a better term, even frivolous, can turn into something quite profound and concerning and meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, I love this idea of sort of elder characters sitting down and trying to help other people, because Philip Roth has a great line about, you know, coming at people and getting them wrong, and you get them wrong, and then you get them wrong over and over again. And I just think it's this very sort of funny proposition that people would ever go to anybody to get advice. I think it's funny, because what you get is not so much advice, you get that person's experience and the sort of a veiled understanding of the world that then you have to absorb something else from. But Peter's not even in this book able to do that. He's really just attempting to protect himself. And that's really the problem, the disconnect between him and Emily Babson when they meet, is that Emily has really built up this idea of the writer as this sage. And I don't think the writer is ever a sage.
Do you use the word in the course of our conversation, and I've asked this in a couple different ways throughout our discussion, but how conscious was this to be satirical in the sense of not only to the publishing industry, but even to the institution of marriage and relationships?
I think it is fair to say that in an initial draft, you write sort of for yourself, and then you write for a few readers, and then you keep writing, and you slowly mold and build a novel with input from other people. And I think that that's certainly fair and true for me, but fair and true for many writers. In my initial draft of this book, it was very satirical, and I think very funny to very, very few people. I made jokes about publishing that I would say tens of people would think were amusing, and some jokes about marriage that were like, again, tens or twenties of people. And as I rebuilt the novel, what started to come out was some deeper and more complicated feelings about, I hope, marriage and love, and the satirical stuff about publishing eroded a little. And so what I hope is that the funny material comes through, but that what stays and is denser and more meaningful is the more emotional material that should be holding the story together. But I still loved all that. I will tell it that in early drafts I made jokes about ebooks and ebook pricing, and I thought those were hilarious, but nobody, I don't think, outside of very few people in publishing really want to read those jokes in a novel.
So. Well, it is a wonderfully funny and beautiful novel, and I have to say, one of the few novels that I've read where I just feel that the ending is perfect. This is very, very beautiful and nice.
Thanks so much. That's really great to hear. I appreciate that.
The name of the novel is Love is a Canoe. It is published by Sarah Crichton Books, FSG. Ben Trank, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us and sharing with us.
Thank you again. It's an honor to be on your show.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.